Hey friend, do you want to offer meaningful learning solutions that create behavior change, fit in the flow of work, and yield real results for your nonprofit? If yes, this is the podcast for you. Join me as I explore instructional design and leadership development best practices, as well as change management, belonging, and influence. If we haven't met yet, I'm Heather, and I've been in your shoes. I'm a learning and development consultant and founder of Skill Masters Market. Before starting my business, I led learning and leadership development initiatives for a large national nonprofit. I know what it's like to need to develop your staff quickly and effectively and to build the relationships and cut through the organizational layers to be successful. And I'm bringing all of that to you in this podcast. So block your calendar, turn off your Teams or Slack chat, and let's dive in. It's learning for good. I often remind myself that a lot of what I do is not life and death. I need this reminder because I want everything to be perfect. I want all of my ideas to work. I want the people that we train in the nonprofit sector to get real results from the training they take. But it's typically not life and death. We often have the freedom and the privilege of experimenting with new ideas and new approaches in our nonprofit training. We can test things and see how they work. We can learn from those tests and iterate to improve over time. And while we, of course, want to succeed and want the best possible outcome, we can feel safe to fail. And then I think about other types of training. And some of this applies to nonprofit as well. But I'm thinking of things like medical training. If a surgeon has taught something and it isn't effective, a patient could experience major health complications. First responder training. If a first responder is taught something and it isn't effective, someone might not get the life-saving support they need. Aviation training. If a pilot is taught something and it isn't effective, a plane could crash. So today, I want us to take some time to learn from another industry. And really, we're going to learn from two. The aviation industry and my guest Craig's experience in manufacturing as well. Now, I've invited Craig Coyle, leadership development expert, to join me today, and he focuses primarily on the manufacturing industry, but he uses lessons from aviation in his work. And I can't wait to hear more about how we can use those lessons too. Let's dive in at Learning for Good. A graduate of the U.S. Military Academy and former U.S. Army Apache pilot, Craig is no stranger to leadership in complex and demanding environments. After many years of active duty service spanning across the globe, he transitioned to the corporate world, where he quickly realized many similar leader development challenges existed. His passion for leadership and developing leaders led him to leave his job and found Operation Lead. Now he helps manufacturing organizations build strategic leader development systems that engage their workforce and unlock their potential. Craig, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Heather.
I'm so excited about this, Craig. We've been connected for a while on LinkedIn. We have so many similarities in how we think about people development. And I can't wait to hear firsthand from you how your different life experiences have impacted the way you think about people development and the way you work with other organizations. Before we get there, though, I always like to start by hearing a little bit about your career journey. It's one thing for me to read your bio and talk a little bit about your experience. It's another thing for you to bring us in and along in that journey. So how did you get here? Tell me a little bit about how that worked.
Yeah, absolutely. I know a lot of your audience is learning and development professionals, have been in the industry for a while. I accidentally fell into this industry, I guess, in a weird way. In high school, I knew I wanted to do something different. I knew I didn't want to just go straight into an office job. So what sounds cool to a high school student? Well, I was always looking in the sky and I thought, I'm going to be a pilot. And the easiest way to go be a pilot is to join the military. And so I set all my cards on going to West Point. And next thing I know, I get commissioned as an officer into the United States Army and I'm going to flight school. And really what my career journey was, is it was two careers meshed into one. On one hand, I was expected to promote through command leadership positions in the military and lead these organizations that would obviously grow in size over the time of my career. But then on the other side, I was a professional aviator as well. And In the Army, we have people that are really solely focused on flying, and then we have the leaders of the aviation community. Those leaders are expected to be just as competent and just as proficient as anybody else that is in the cockpit of those aircraft. And what I quickly realized through my own failures was I was being set up to succeed as a pilot. Like, there were stakes that everybody understood, and the military and our government really created a system, and the aviation industry as a whole created a system that would make sure pilots would continue to succeed over and over. And there are a lot of different things that go into that system, but as a leader, I really didn't see that. I went through this incredible leader development program and institution, but I still felt lost in leadership on the front lines of the military. And then I kind of left the military and saw the same thing in the corporate world as well. And I started thinking, if a medical professional approaches things a certain way, and if a legal professional approaches things a certain way, and if an aviation professional approaches a certain way, why don't we do that as leaders? And it really started kicking all these concepts and ideas in my mind, and really ultimately landed us where we are today.
I love that. And I don't think very many of us have a very straight line in our career to get us where we are. So while many of my listeners are in L&D, they probably came here by way of some other field, potentially even another career altogether. So I love hearing how people get where they are, because all of those experiences make you who you are today. Now, in a previous conversation, you shared with me that 2/3 of all new leaders fail or quit within 18 months. Why is that?
Yeah, it's a statistic that's thrown around quite a lot. And I think we often don't really think too critically about why, because we just assume, oh, they weren't born as a leader, or oh, they didn't get the specific skill set they needed in that specific context or role. But I like to look at it from a more holistic viewpoint. And I think it starts with a core belief that becoming a leader is typically becoming a new person. Like, you're taking off an old version of yourself, and you have to become a completely new individual. And I think the challenge there is that in our society, we're really taught and trained, and we are really molded to succeed as an individual. If you think how we go through school and what most of our college experiences look like, it's all individual based. But then you enter into leadership and everything changes, because it can't be about you anymore. It has to be about the collective. That doesn't just happen overnight. And when we take all of our life experiences, good or bad, and the beliefs and the mindsets that are now within our subconscious, and we apply that to this change that may or may not have happened overnight, we run into a lot of challenges. And I don't think we are typically looking at that transition into leadership through the lens of what I'm sure a lot of your audience is familiar with, like the change theory or the change model or those things. And when we don't look at it that way, everything looks great. New leaders are always excited and they think they're going to conquer the world in the first 30 to 60 days. But then what happens? We start falling down into that phase of, I like to call it, informed pessimism, and into that valley of despair. And that's where most of these new leaders, 6, 12, 18 months into their journey, really start to struggle. And when we really start to struggle, all those emotions on us, what happens is we don't rise to the level of our aspirations. No, we fall to the level of our habits. And our habits are defined by the quality of our relationships. And if we just entered into leadership, where are all of our relationships? They're probably not with other new leaders. They're probably not with leaders that have been on that journey and can normalize that journey and hold us accountable. And so what happens with 2/3 of new leaders is they just continue to approach leadership with the mindset that made them successful previously, and it actually ends up doing more harm than good.
Do you wish you could connect with other nonprofit learning and development leaders? I know what it feels like to want someone to bounce ideas off of and to learn from, someone who really understands you and your work. Imagine if you could have a simple way to meet people in the field, ask questions, and share information. That's why I created the Nonprofit Learning and Development Collective, where nonprofit, L&D, talent management, and DEI leaders can connect with each other quickly and easily in a virtual space. When you join this community, you will walk away with a new, diverse, and powerful network and a sounding board for your staff development needs. So if you're ready to exchange ideas and collaborate with your peers, come join the Nonprofit L&D Collective. Yeah, as you were talking, I'm like, yes. And then when they do that, they fall back on their old habits. And then that's exactly what you said. So you know that we both agree and we talk a lot about habits and change and how relationships and some of that support is so, so critical. One of the ways that you can help to overcome that statistic of failing or quitting within 18 months is by providing support to those new leaders. And you use a 3-part system that has been used in the aviation industry. So tell us a little bit more about that. What are those 3 components? What does that look like?
Yeah. And, you know, it's not really a system that I've ever heard taught formally or anything, but really when I was comparing what I felt made me grow and continue to develop as a pilot to what I kind of saw missing in the leadership space, there are really 3 things that stood out. So first and foremost, in aviation, there's a lot of structure, right? Most organizations, especially ones that are listening to a show like this, like they're going to get a piece of structure right. Like they're going to have some learning objectives. They might have some consistency built into a program. So they have a little bit there. The second piece, they also probably have a little bit of as well. In aviation, it's this idea of an instructor pilot, right? So it's not just that you have clear tasks and maneuvers that you have to learn, and there are gateways you have to meet to grow as a pilot and to get whatever license or certification you want. You actually have people that are certified to help train you in those tasks, in those skills, and guide you in that journey. So what does that look like? I mean, that could be a coach. It could be some form of a mentorship program. You know, in some bigger organizations, I love when I see organizations do like cohort stuff, and then the leading cohort kind of mentors the trailing cohort in a way. But I think when you start to pair structure and guidance together, you're starting to build a lot of momentum, and you're even starting to get a little bit of accountability. The last piece, which I think is the most critical piece, which I think is what most places are missing, is the idea of community. And what I mean by that is I went through flight school with a group of 20 or 30 different people in the same class as me. We still talk to this day. And we used to study together, and we used to plan our flights together. Now, we all were, in a way, competing to be the best in our class. We all went to different parts of the Army. But the same kind of idea exists at every phase in your journey as a pilot. Even when I was promoting more senior aviation roles within the cockpit, I still had people to the left and right of me that were all trying and aspiring to reach certain levels, and we would help each other. We would lean on each other. And the biggest pushback I get when I talk about this to people is they often say, well, you were in the United States Army. That's a huge organization. You talk about competition, but what about my small organization? Like, how do I create that sense of community if Joe Smith over here and then Tom Matthews over here both want the position that's next to them? I was like, you have to view it with an abundance mindset. Because if you don't, then you're just hamstringing yourself at the end of the day. I think if you just try to objectively look at the benefits of community and relationship, they far outweigh any costs that can possibly come, whether it's through competition, whether that's inside your organization or outside your organization. And you just have to know that the benefits of community and how that's going to help hold these new leaders accountable and ultimately help them get through that phase in the change theory of the change cycle. It's so critical.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's one of the things that we probably don't talk about enough in learning and development is the opportunity we have to build relationships and build that community for people, because yes, you might be designing a training, a learning experience, a thing, but at the end of the day, they're going back into the workplace and they can take those relationships with them and take that with them for the rest of their career. So we have structure, we have guidance, we have community. Bring that to life a little bit for me. How do you, when you're working with an organization, how do you bring those together in people manager development?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing or takeaway I would give your listeners for this episode would be this. So often we look at leader development and it's very tactical, right? It's like, okay, what skills does a new leader need? Great. If you're doing that, you're ahead of probably most organizations. But I want you to take a step back and I want you to start looking at it from a strategic view. I'm reading a book right now. It's Chet Holmes's book. It's The Ultimate Sales Machine, something like that. And he says there's three types of CEOs. 90% of CEOs are strategic only. And so they have these great ideas, but they never get done, right? Because they just spew ideas to all their team members and they never actually get followed through. The next 9% are mostly tactical. So they're just micromanagers. They're not actually leading their organizations anymore. But he said, like, the 1% left over are the best CEOs, because they're visionary and strategic and they can see how to direct an entire organization, but then they understand how to implement tactics, because at the end of the day, strategy is useless if it can't be executed. And so I want to encourage people to take that mindset and the principle there and apply it to leader development. Instead of focusing so much on the tactics of leader development, let's take a bigger view, a bigger picture of it, and think about what are we trying to accomplish as an organization? And when you can see that, then you can start to see what each of your departments need to accomplish in order to contribute to that success or that mission. When you boil that down all the way into what actions need to be taken on the front lines of your organization, it quickly becomes visible the type of leaders you need on those front lines in order to inspire that engagement and inspire that action and inspire the commitment, ultimately, that's going to help you move the needle in your organization. And when you can see that clearly, then you have a clear picture of what your structure looks like. Then you have a clear picture of what your guidance looks like. And then your community just falls in place with that. And, you know, the unique thing with community from a nonprofit perspective is competition is a lot less prominent, if you will. You're not trying to put the company to your left down the street out of business because you're worried about your profits. So there's actually a huge opportunity from a community perspective to partner with other nonprofits and really amplify all of your ability to accomplish what you're looking to accomplish.
That's great advice. As you think about, again, this audience in particular, many of them are nonprofit learning and development folks. Is there any, like, one thing you mentioned, like, move beyond tactical, look at it more strategically? Is there anything else they should know as they start to implement? Any final words of advice or thoughts for this group?
Yeah, I think when you're specifically focused and thinking and talking about new leaders and encouraging their growth over time, especially viewing it from this lens of, like, almost like developing a habit in a way, is how I look at it. Sometimes the most important thing you can do is get a quick win. Like, give somebody a quick victory. I like to read a lot, so that's where all my references come from. But I was reading a book recently, and it was talking about habits within the wellness industry. And it was with respect to a fat loss program. And the program talked about the first 2 weeks were, like, extremely aggressive, unsustainably aggressive. But they were that way because people usually have motivation. If you think about the change theory, they're excited in that really small beginning window before they realize how much harder it's really going to be. And so you want to lean into that a bit, maximize it, so you can visibly see those victories take place. So in this wellness program, they would get super aggressive for a week to 2 weeks, and then people would see, like, a significant reduction in their weight. And then they'd be bought into the journey. And then things scaled back and got a little bit more sustainable. So I would encourage you, especially as you're promoting from within, which I believe is one of the best ways to create new leaders, because they understand your purpose, they understand your culture. As you're doing that, what's the quickest one you can give them? I've created this thing I call the pre-flight checklist for new leaders. And it's just whether you use something like that, or you use a tool like Patrick Lencioni's, or you're using some of the leader standard work principles in more of a lean Six Sigma type environment. The key here is give clarity to your new leaders, give them something easy that they can follow, that they can repeat over the course of the first 90 days, and so that they can create belief in who they are and overcome this kind of imposter syndrome we all face in leadership. And then you're going to have them bought in to the challenges of the journey that lie ahead.
That is great advice. And we can definitely link to the pre-flight checklist in the show notes. So if anybody wants to check that out, they can sometimes do that. So Craig, I have loved this episode. I've loved our conversation. I think it's so important that people know what's expected of them. It's really hard to meet expectations when they aren't clear. So having that structure that you're talking about is essential. The guidance piece, obviously, really important, whether that is through, like you're saying, coaches, mentors, other people who have been in their shoes previously, and in the community, that encouragement we can intentionally create and facilitate across an organization. So thank you again for joining us today. Thank you again for sharing some of your work and how you approach leadership development as you're working with organizations. So many opportunities that we have in nonprofit to learn from other industries. So I really appreciate that you're sharing what worked for you, thinking about things from an aviation lens, but also in your work with manufacturing as well.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. You're so right. Like, when we can sometimes step out of the kind of niche we're in, sometimes the biggest lessons start to. I remember I was leading a company in the military. Almost all of the material I was focusing on absorbing were business books. And I stood out from all my peers just because of the lessons I could apply from clarity and messaging and marketing and all those kinds of things. So I'm just so happy that I could join and add some value to you guys today.
Thank you, Craig. Structure, guidance, and community. How are you making those expectations clear? How are you supporting your people leaders? How are you providing that accountability that's needed? Such valuable questions for us to ask ourselves as we create leadership development in our organizations. It's about more than a leadership training. It's about providing that ongoing support they need to be successful. That's how organizations thrive. I'll see you next time on Learning for Good. Hey friend, was this episode helpful for you? Did you like what you heard? Do you want more content like this? Here are three things you can do. Hit subscribe. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast app of choice. Share this episode with a colleague. This means so much to me personally. I read every review, but it also helps me learn what content you like most so I can create more of what you want. All right, turn that Teams or Slack chat back on when you're ready, and I'll see you next time on Learning for Good.